All right, take your Bibles tonight, open them up to the book of Zechariah. We're going to try to get through chapters 7 and 8 tonight. I've reminded you every week that Zechariah is the longest minor prophet in the Bible, and his name means God remembers. And we've talked about the seven visions that were in the first six chapters, and so tonight we come to chapters 7 and 8. Now, some people divide the book of Zechariah into two parts. Chapters 1 through 8 and then 9 through 14. And they say that chapters 7 and 8, again, are the last part of part 1, as they divide it. And the instruction that God gives actually in the last part of chapter 6 and then in chapter 7 and 8 builds upon the visions. That chapter 7 and 8 were written to the remnant. And you remember all the visions were to the remnant, the group of about 50,000 people that had come back out of Babylon, come to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. And chapter 7 has a date on it. We'll talk about that in a minute. And so that's why they put it together, all the visions and these messages that are in the last part of 6 and 7 and 8 as to one part. And then the second part, they say, starts in chapter 9, and it talks, doesn't have a date. It's written to all of the Jews, and it talks about the coming Messiah. Now, other people divide it into three parts. The visions, chapter 7 and 8, which deals with a group of people's questions about fasting, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, not about fasting, but about their question, and then the chapters 9 through 14. And I got to thinking this afternoon, it doesn't matter how you divide the book. It's really not important. What's important is that we realize the message of the book comes from God. And it's just as relevant today as it was in Zechariah's day. And there's messages in it today for us, just like there was for the people back then, that we need to heed, pay attention to, and act upon. I don't believe it's any accident that we're studying this book at this particular time. I don't believe there's any accident that we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about tonight. I believe it's part of God's plan. He knew that we were going to be studying this book at this particular time before we did. And he's put something in these chapters for each one of us. So I come teaching tonight, and I hope you come hearing tonight with that thought in mind. Man, God has prepared this particular half hour that we're going to spend together for me, and he has prepared something just for me. I can always remember going to Debbie's grandmother. She was a wonderful cook, and she always made you feel that what she made was just for you. I mean, she made it for everybody that was there, but you sat down at the table and you had the feeling that she made it just for you. And in the same way, that's how we ought to feel. That what God has for us tonight is just for us. A lot of people think, well, you know, Angie may be sitting up here next to Nick, and she may not go like this, but she says, oh, that's to Nick. I know that's to Nick. I'm just using your example because you're close. But that's not the way we should think about it. What we ought to think about, what's the message for me? What's God talking to me about? Because I know he has something for me. Okay, so in chapter 7, verse 1, and it came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah in the fourth day of the ninth month, even in Chislu. Okay, so fourth day, ninth month, fourth year of Darius. You remember back in chapter 1, the visions that came to Zechariah came in the 24th day of the 11th month in the second year of Darius. So we've got about 22 months between the seven visions and this message that Zechariah, or that God has, is delivering through Zechariah that we're going to talk about tonight. So almost 2 years has passed. And you might ask the question, well, has Zechariah been silent for those 2 years? I don't think so. There's nothing recorded in the Word of God that happened in those 2 years. I know the work of rebuilding the temple was going on. They were working at it. And I know Zechariah and Haggai both were sent by God to encourage them as they built the temple. So even though we don't know what messages came from God or what these prophets talked about in those 2 years, I'm sure that they encouraged the people to keep at it. Verse 2. When they had sent unto the house of God, Sherezer and Regemmelech and their men to pray before the Lord. So, in this word from the Lord, it's coming in response to the fact that two men came. They came from a little village called Bethel. Bethel was a place that Jeroboam had put one of the golden calves. You remember when the kingdom was split, Rehoboam and Jeroboam? Jeroboam had taken 10 tribes, and he said, now if the people go back to Jerusalem, which was in the other kingdom, they won't follow me. So he set up two golden calves, one in Dan and one in Bethel. And he said, these are the gods that brought you out of Egypt. Worship these. Josiah destroyed that golden calf. Okay, and the city of Bethel was destroyed by the Babylonians when they destroyed Jerusalem. But when the Jews came back, they had rebuilt this little village and were living there. And two men came from that village with a question in verse 3. And to speak, so they came to pray before the Lord and to speak unto the priest, which were in the house of the Lord of hosts. And then the prophet saying, should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself as I have done these so many years. Now, that word weeping and or weep and separating myself indicates fasting. Okay, so I'm weeping, I'm separating myself from food. And it was in the fifth month, and it was in memory or commemoration, however you want to say it, of the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar. And they had kept this fast in the fifth month for the past 70 years and for about the 20 years that they, 18 years, 20 years or so that they had been back. And so here was their question. Hey, we're back home. We're rebuilding the temple. This fast is to commemorate the destruction of the temple. Should we continue to keep it? Should we continue to do it? God heard the question, and he says in verse 4, then came the word of the Lord of hosts unto me, saying, so God's going to answer the question, and by the way, he's going to be very, very blunt. He says in verse 5, speak unto all the people of the land, not to just these two guys, not just to the city of Bethel, but tell everybody, everybody needs to hear this, and to the priests, saying, when ye fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, even these 70 years, did ye at all fast unto me, even to me? He said, did you do it for me? Or did you do it for yourself? You see, God only instructed his people to keep one fast. It was on the Day of Atonement, the 10th day of the 7th month. And when God was talking about there, he mentioned the fifth month that they had asked about, and the seventh month, he wasn't talking about the Day of Atonement fast. The Day of Atonement fast, remember, the Day of Atonement was the one year that the priest could go into the Holy of Holies, and he would kill an animal and take the blood into the Holy of Holies, sprinkle it on the mercy seat, and make atonement for the people's sins for that year. Only once a year he could do it, 10th day of the 7th month. And the fast of that day was supposed to remind the people as they fasted, hey, that we're sinners. We've disobeyed God, and we need this atonement. We need what the priest is going to do in the Holy of Holies, and they were looking forward to what Jesus was going to do. We look backward to it, but they were looking forward to what Christ was going to do on Calvary. And we need to remind ourselves, either by fasting or some other way, and fasting was the method back then on the Day of Atonement, that we are sinners and we need that atonement. But the fast of the seventh month that God was talking about in this verse was in commemoration of the death of Gedaliah, who was the governor appointed by Nebuchadnezzar in Jerusalem after he destroyed it. So they had a fast to commemorate or to remember when the temple was destroyed. They had a fast, that was in the fifth month. They had a fast in the seventh month to remember when this governor was killed. They had a fast in the fourth month to mark when the first breach in the wall was made. They had a fast in the tenth month when the siege of Jerusalem began. So there were four different fasts, four different months, all surrounding the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. And God said, hey, when you have these fasts, you're not doing it unto me. You're doing it unto yourselves. They're fast of self-pity. He says in verse 6, and when you did eat and when you did drink, in other words, when the fast was over and when you started eating and started drinking, did not ye eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? You thought you were doing it to get my favor. You thought you were doing it to please me. You don't please me with fast and ceremony and ritual. He says in verse 7, he gets right at the heart of the issue. Should ye not hear the words with the Lord, which the Lord hath cried by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and in prosperity, and the cities thereof round about her, when men inhabited the south and the plain? And what he was saying is, listen, you should have heard the prophets, and the word heard not only means to hear with your ears, but to obey, to do. He said, you should have heard the prophets, the former prophets, that were in Jerusalem, that were prophesying when you lived here, when you enjoyed prosperity, when everything was right. You should have listened to them. And then all of these fasts that you have, these four fasts that commemorate the destruction of Jerusalem, you wouldn't need them. If you would have just listened to the prophets of old and obeyed and done what I told you to do, you wouldn't even be asking this question. Because the punishment wouldn't have come. The destruction of Jerusalem wouldn't happen. And I thought to myself, how many times, in how many ways, does God have to tell us this same thing? You want my favor? You want to please me? You want my blessings? Here it is in one simple word. Obey. Obey. That's it. Remember we told Saul, when Saul came back, he was supposed to destroy all the Amalekites and everything they had, and they got over there, and instead of killing everybody, they saved the king. Instead of killing all the animals, they saved the best cattle. And Samuel went out to meet him, and Saul said, I did everything that God told me to do. And Samuel said, well then, how come I hear all these sheep and cows bleating and mooing and making noise? Oh, well, Saul said, well, we decided to keep the best to sacrifice to God. And Samuel said, as God spoke through him, don't you know that to obey is better than sacrifice? God's not interested in your sacrifices if you're not being obedient. And it's the same thing today. I mean, in the New Testament, Jesus said, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples, that you keep my commandments. It's not by ceremony. It's not by rituals. It's obedience. And God just wants us to obey what he says. He does not want us to have a better idea. He does not want us to say, well, I got a better way. He just wants us to simply say, God said it, I will do it. And that's how we please God. That's how we gain his favor. Look at verse 8. And the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, again, Zechariah wants everybody to know, it's not my word, it's God's word. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, execute true judgment, and show mercy and compassion every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. I mean, God says, this is what I want you to do. I mean, it's simple. Just obey. Just do what I tell you to do. You know, have justice. Show mercy and kindness to every man to his brother. Don't oppress those that the world wants to oppress, the widows and the orphans and the strangers and the poor. Don't imagine evil against your brother. God required it then. He hasn't changed. He requires it now. Verse 11. But they, again, they were talking, they is the people that were in Jerusalem when they were in prosperity that wouldn't listen to these prophets, but they refused to hearken and pulled away the shoulder and stopped their ears that they should not hear. What God was saying is, as they're talking about pulling away the shoulder, they're just stubborn people. They heard the message from God and just pulled away from it. I mean, I can't remember. Aaron was listening to something the other day, Friday night when I was babysitting. It must not, because he went like this. And that's what God says. That's what my people have done. I sent the prophets to warn them. I sent with a message of just obey, do these things. And they stopped their ears so they couldn't hear. And they made their heart hard. Verse 12. Yea, they made their hearts as an animate stone, lest they should hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts had sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. He said, all I wanted you to do was listen. All I wanted you to do was obey. But you hardened your heart and you wouldn't listen and you wouldn't obey. And so I had to come with great wrath. I want to tell you something. God hasn't changed. He wants the same thing today. And so many times, maybe not about everything he says, but about those things that he says to us, you know, that sort of get under our skin, that sort of prick us like a pin. We get so stubborn, if we're not careful, we'll harden our heart. And as the message of God keeps coming and coming and coming and coming and coming, we can't hear it because we've hardened our heart. We've said no so many times that God can't get through to us. And his wrath will come. Verse 13. Therefore, it has come to pass that as he cried, and they would not hear, so they cried, and I would not hear, saith the Lord of hosts. This is a terrible position to be in with God. God said, I cried, and you didn't listen. Judgment came, and you cried, and I didn't listen. That's a place where you want to stay out of with God. And the way you stay out of it is listen to what he cries. Listen to what he says. If there's something in your life that shouldn't be there, if there's something in your life that should be there, it's not, God's going to let you know. And he's going to cry out. Maybe through a sermon, it may be through a Sunday school lesson, it may be through a Bible verse that you read. And all he wants is you to obey. He doesn't want us to argue. He doesn't want us to give alternatives to him. He doesn't need any alternatives. We just need to get this through our little stubborn heads sometimes that God's way is the best way. And we just need to be obedient. Verse 14, but I scattered them with a whirlwind among all the nations whom they knew not. Thus the land was desolate after them, that no man passed through nor returned, for they laid the pleasant land desolate. That was because they didn't listen, they didn't hear, they didn't obey. Now, chapter 8. Again, the word of the Lord of hosts came to me saying, by the way, in chapter 7, God's looking back to what's happened in the past. He said, this is why the judgment came. In chapter 8, he's looking forward to the future. And he says, now look, I'm back, and I will bless you. But it's the blessings are conditional on the same condition that I gave to your forefathers, obedience. Obedience. Verse 2, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. God loved his people so much that he was so jealous that he did not want anything in between. He said, with a great jealousy and with great fury. What is it that separates us from God? Sin. And what's sin in its basic form? Disobedience. And God said, now look, I don't want nothing in between. I'm jealous, and I don't want you to have something in your life that's sin, that separates me from you. I just don't want it there. Get rid of it. Verse 3, thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Again, thus saith the Lord. He said, I'm back. I've come back to Jerusalem. I'm going to dwell there. It's going to be a city of truth, faithfulness, and fidelity. And it's going to be on a holy mountain because I'm going to be there. And you're going to be separated unto me and be a holy people. Verse 4. Again, thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. He's saying there's going to be peace in that city when I come back. And the old men and the old women are going to walk in the streets, and they're going to sit in the streets. And that staff indicates that they get up in years and enjoy the peace that God brings to the city. Verse 5, and the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. That's been gone for a long time. When God took himself, removed himself from Jerusalem and the city was destroyed, they lost the sense of security that old people have to have and that children have to have to play in the streets. And God says, I'm back. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bless you. And old people will be in the streets again and children will play in the streets again. Verse 6, thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnants of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts? The remnant, the people that were there, they're going to look at it and they're going to be amazed. They said, this is a marvelous work that God has done. Like they don't think I can do it. And he asked a rhetorical question, should it be marvelous in my eyes? No, because I know what I can do, God says. And we need to know what God can do. I mean, we look at some of the things that God does, and we're in awe, and we're in amazement at some of the things God does. But we shouldn't be surprised, because that's the kind of God that he is. He can do the impossible. He can do what men... He said, call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things thou knowest not. God can do the things that we can't even think of in answer to prayer. So he says, not going to be marvelous in my eyes because I know what kind of God I am. Verse 7, thus saith the Lord of hosts. No matter how many times Zechariah mentioned this. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. This is not my message. This is a message from God. I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. In other words, from the whole world. I will save my people. And verse 8, and I will bring them and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem and they shall be my people and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. I'm going to bring them back and they're going to live in this city and they're going to be my people and I will be their God. But again, in truth and righteousness, they need to hear, they need to obey, they need to do what I tell them to do. And again, God hasn't changed. If we could just get that little kernel of truth into our brains, past our stubbornness, past our hard heart, and know that when God tells us, you say, God never tells me to do anything, then you must not be spending much time in this book. Because he tells us a whole bunch of things to do in this book. And if we could just get it through our mind, if I just be obedient, if I just do what God says, I could get the blessings of God. I don't have to argue with them. I don't have to give them a better idea. We're guilty of the... Sometimes we are guilty of the same sin that Satan committed. Why no better than God? I can be God. I can ascend up to where he sets, and I can set where he sets, and I can rise up because I know as much as God does. Remember when he was in the garden, tempting Eve? Oh, God didn't really mean that you would die if you eat the fruit. Yes, he did. He wouldn't have said if he meant it. And sometimes when God gets under our skin, and again, it's always easier to point somebody else. Boy, that's for that person right there. I know there's something in their life that God's dealing with them about, and they're being stubborn about it. What about you? What about me? What's God pricking us with tonight? Are we being stubborn? Have we hardened our hearts so that we can't even hear anymore? We're going to miss the blessings of God, some of them, if we don't pay attention and listen to what God says. Verse 9, thus saith the Lord of hosts, let your hands be strong, ye that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets, which were in the day that the foundation of the house of the Lord of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. And what he was saying is, now look, and by the way, he said, thus saith the Lord of hosts again, listen to the prophets that are in these days. Listen to me, Zechariah is saying. Listen to Haggai. Listen to Malachi that was going to come on the scene pretty soon. Don't be like your forefathers. They had prophets like us, and they didn't listen to them. You need to listen. Be strong. Rise up. Get the job done. Get the temple rebuilt. That's what it says. Be strong. Verse 10. For before these days, there was no hire for man, nor any hire for beast, neither was there any peace to him that went out or came in because of the affliction. For I set all men, every one, against his neighbor. It had been 18 years since the people had come back from Babylon, and the temple was still not done. They had been working on it the past 2 years. When Zechariah delivered the visions, it inspired the people to go back to work. And what he was saying in this verse is, hey, you remember what it was like before you went back to work on the temple? There was no higher for man, nor any higher for beast. In other words, there wasn't any crops. There wasn't any money. There wasn't any peace. God said, you want to know who caused that? I did. Because you were disobedient. I brought you back to rebuild the temple, and you built your own houses, but you didn't build mine. Don't tell me that God doesn't have the power in today's world to take away our bank accounts, our IRAs, our savings, and everything we got, if he wants to, because we're not being obedient to him. He can still do that. Let's not think that we're so high and mighty that we can stop God from doing it, because we're not. We're not. Verse 11. But now I will not be unto the residue of this people as in the former days, saith the Lord of hosts. Things are going to change. I'm going to remove the curse. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to be like I was with the people that came back and laid the foundation that got the work started. Verse 12. For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give her fruit, and the ground shall give her increase, and the heavens shall give their due, and I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these things. He says, I'll send you food, I'll send you the fruit of the vine, I'll send you the ground will yield their increase, the heavens shall give their due. I'm going to return the ideal conditions to this land that you've known in the past. And it shall come to pass that as you were a curse among the house among the heathen, O house of Judah and house of Israel, so will I save you, and ye shall be a blessing. Fear not, but let your hands be strong. You were a curse. The two separate nations, you were a curse to the people of the earth. But I'm going to change that, and you're going to be a blessing. So be strong. Get the temple rebuilt. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, as I thought to punish you when your fathers provoked me to wrath, saith the Lord of hosts, and I repented not, so again have I thought in these days to do well unto Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. Fear ye not. Just like I wasn't going to change my mind when I promised to punish your fathers because they didn't obey, I'm not going to change my mind to bless you, if you will. The same determination and tenacity that I had over here to punish is the same determination and tenacity I will have to bless if you obey. Verse 15. So again, have I thought in these days to do well unto Jerusalem and to the house of Judah? Fear ye not. These are the things that ye shall do. Speak every man the truth to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates. And let none of you imagine evil in your heart against his neighbor. And love no false oath. For all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. Again, some simple instruction. This is what I want you to do. And the word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth month, and the fast of the fifth, and the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth shall be to the house of Judah joy and gladness and cheerful feast. Therefore, love the truth and peace. All these fasts that you had set up to commemorate the destruction of the temple and the breach in the wall and the beginning of the siege and the death of the governor, they're all going to go away. And I'm going to make them into times of joy. Times of joy. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people, and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I will go also. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to pray before the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men, and 10 men means all the world, 10 men means a large crowd, shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. What Zechariah was saying, look, everybody's going to hear that I'm back. Everybody's going to hear that I am blessing you. And when people hear that the Lord is in a place and blessing that place, they will want to come. And they will want to get in on the work of God. People need the Lord. Angie sings that song. People need the Lord. They do. And they will come to a place where his presence is known with a people that are obedient to do what God tells them to do. It's a message to us as individuals. It's a message to us as a church. People need the Lord, and they will come to a place that's trying to be obedient to do what God tells them to do. Because they'll want in on it. I couldn't help but think, of the theme that we had last year from the book of Matthew. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. As we live out the blessings of God because of obedience, people will see it and say, boy, I don't know what they got, but I want some. Huh? I want some. I'm going to go to where they are. I'm going to see if I can get in on what they got. And it all comes down to how obedient we're going to be. How obedient are we going to be? Are we going to be stubborn? Are we going to harden our hearts and keep saying no and no and no and no and no and no and no? Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. That's the secret. That's the secret. Glad you were here tonight. Let's stand and we'll have a word of prayer. Be dismissed.